You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, Peace Talk with Tundra Women's Coalition.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us at TWC's Peace Talk radio show. TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what work we are doing and answer questions if people have them. The thrift store will now be accepting donations, so if you have donations, please call TWC to receive instructions on how and where to bring the donations. Please refrain from leaving them outside the thrift store as these items will be affected by the weather. The thrift store is volunteer-run and also currently opening at random times, so if you would like to go, call at 907-543-3789. There are job openings at TWC, so if you are interested in becoming a part of the TWC family, you can find the application at www.tundrapeace.org or check our Facebook page. So, if you would like to call TWC for any information regarding services or any of the programs that we offer the community, you can call our 24-hour crisis line at 907-543-3456, our toll-free number at 1-800-478-7799, or our Bethel local business line at 907-543-3444. This is a call-in show, so if you would like more information or to express interest in any topics surrounding domestic violence or sexual assault, please feel free to call in at 907-543-2756 or 800-995-8954. Again, those numbers are 907-543-2756 or 1-800-995-8954. The topic today will be about surrounding the families of children survivors of sexual assault. I'm Annie Mae Lee. I'm the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator at TWC. Would you ladies like to introduce yourself?
Yes, good morning. My name is Hazel Keezer. I'm the family advocate here at the Children's Advocacy Center.
And good morning. This is Carmen Pitka. I work here at the Children's Advocacy Center as well.
All right. So all statements or opinions shared on the Peace Talk radio show are coming from a place of education and collaboration. We do not come from a place of judgment or any type of idea that we know what is best for any community or person out there listening. Our goal is simply to share with the community and hopefully learn together. I'm going to give a disclaimer. The subject may be sensitive or triggering to some because we are talking about the subject of child sexual abuse. We will try our best to talk about it in a way that is positive and encouraging, but some of the information or language surrounding this area may be triggering. So, ladies, we're going to start with our personal history, and I'm going to ask the first question. So what does it take to keep compassion for yourself and those who seek help from your program?
Good morning again, Anna Mae. This is Hazel. One of the things that I had to do for myself, I needed to realize that when I was suffering or I was failing, that I needed to make it possible for me to have self-compassion. And it's the same way that we have when we are looking at somebody that's having a difficult time. And we need to, you know, notice that we can't just ignore our pain and, you know, have that stiff upper lip mentality. And we really need to tell ourselves, you know, this is really difficult right now. And how can I comfort and care for myself in this moment? A lot of people don't realize that they are practicing self-care and self-compassion. And a lot of that, you know, can be taking a mati, spending time with close friends or relatives. You know, we need to make ourselves be able to forgive ourselves for our mistakes. We need to take care of our minds and our bodies and spend time doing things that we really enjoy.
No, I agree, and I really like what you said, especially the fact that you said self-compassion, because a lot of times we are under this impression that, like, compassion is something that you give to others all the time, and it's inherently unselfish to give compassion. But I like the idea that, you know, the same compassion you give to others is what you put onto yourself. So thank you very much.
Yes.
So, Carmen, what does it take to keep compassion for yourself and those who seek services from your program?
Sure. Let me go into a little bit of my history. So my maternal grandparents are the Lake Moxie Pitka and Nus of Avakumov of Jokpalak. My paternal grandparents are Ivan and Catherine Alexei of Kalskag. I am the eldest of six other siblings. My IPUC is Jeremy Woods, and we have two adopted children. My mom is Nancy Ann, and her husband is from the community of Marshall. And I've been with the Children's Advocacy Center since November of 2017. And the Children's Advocacy Center has been accredited since October of 2019. I share a lot of stories, and that helps me. I think looking at the first question here, Anime, what does it take to keep compassion for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share that, you know, I have a lot of happy memories, and I, you know, with loved ones who have gone too soon, and heavy memories of people in my life that have died, and a few that are still alive today. The perpetrators include a deceased family member and known people that are married into my maternal family or other known people. These are lifelong wounds that pierce the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. And as an adult, I cope with trauma. There's healthy and unhealthy ways. I also feel shame and embarrassment because of actions I cannot take back. As an adult with trauma, I hurt loved ones, and this includes my family, that do not deserve my anger. And I hurt myself. I'm not looking for pity. You know, I hold on to healing and hope for myself, for my family, and the people of the Waikiki Delta region. Thank you.
Oof, I want to give you a high five from over here. thank you very much for sharing your personal history.
Sure.
All right. And actually, I'm going to open up the floor. I'm going to actually share a little bit of my personal history. And I like to say this when I go on the radio, is that I myself am a victim of DVSA, but it was mostly something that occurred in my childhood. And I've had a lot of questions about domestic violence and sexual assault ever since I was very young. And a lot of people are surprised at how, like, pensive my thoughts were when I was very young. I just didn't really know how to verbalize them at the time. So when I usually come through these services, I'm asking questions as someone who's learning along with the audience. Sometimes these questions are questions from my childhood. Sometimes these questions are just things that I have from now. So you're going to hear me ask a lot of questions today, just to let you know. So just for today, like, what do you hope to convey, or what do you hope people get out of the radio show when we're talking about supporting families of child sexual assault?
This is Carmen. So what I hope to convey during my time with you all is, my hope is we become better teachers, educators. We are a voice for our children to protect them before sexual abuse and severe physical abuse happens. Talk to your children about consent, boundaries, and grooming, and that their private body parts are private for these reasons. Help your children to understand what these words mean, and you can use scenarios or analogies to help your children understand.
Thank you. Hazel?
Yeah, I share a lot with what Carmen has said, and just knowing for our listeners, you know, that there are groups of people that are out here that care and are understanding of what they are going through, and that there are resources that's available to be able to help families heal with their children. And that's what I wanted to share with our listeners.
Thank you. And I'm going to share something. And I'm actually going to start this off with a really, really cute little story. This actually happened yesterday. Someone I know has this daughter. She's 3. And this woman, I admire her a lot. I like her parenting style. It's really, really cute. But she basically does not put her child in any sense of, like, I'm obligated to hug this person. I'm obligated to give them a kiss. I'm obligated to do anything. And that's been a really big goal of hers. And the fact that, you know, someone took her to the bathroom when she was away, like, they took her to go, you know, pee. She said she needed to pee. And she was like, is it all right if I pee? Hold on, I'm going to go tell someone that you're going to take me to pee. And I thought that was the cutest thing ever. Just the fact that that little child was like, I'm going to go tell someone that you're taking me to the bathroom. I really hope that, I really, really think that really inspired me to do more outreach and to really talk about these scenarios more often. So that way, maybe there'll be more situations where children, when they're put in vulnerable situations, feel that they have to tell their parents before they're put in them. And I really hope that awareness and conversations around this will build to that one day. And I know that we're off by a while, but it's still a hope and it's still a possibility that one day every child will have that instinct. And that's kind of what I hope happens, is that we have conversations around this. And I really wanted to share that story. I think I was, like, gunning for a reason to tell that story, but that really inspired me. All right. So we're going to be talking about, you know, your jobs. You work with families of children who are survivors of child sexual or physical abuse. So this can be a job that really can take a toll on your mental health or on the community. And so supporting the family of those children can be particularly difficult. So I want to talk about, like, what's rewarding about this. So what would you say is the most rewarding part of working with families of children who are survivors of sexual or physical abuse?
This is Carmen Anime. I had this question, you know, it was hard for me to answer. And I think because we work here at a victim services place here at the Thunder Women's Coalition. One thing that is rewarding is, you know, I'm able to see these families, the children leave with smiles and at least feeling or taking with them the hope and that something can be done before they leave here, and that they know that they're safe and that we care and that we're with them through this.
So just that, like, reassurance throughout the process.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, I mean, this is Hazel. You know, the one thing that really speaks to me, and it's an assurance, knowing that children, you know, they are resilient. You know, the biggest part of what I do here, I'm a part of a team that's, you know, dedicated to the charge of helping in the process of them having justice and healing, and being able to have an opportunity like this to be able to share, you know, with the YK Delta, that we're here.
Yeah. You know, talking about these situations can be really troubling sometimes. And so just knowing that there's someone here to support is sometimes the most empowering thing for me as, like, a service provider. So I 100% agree with you. I will say that I'm not a part of CAC as, like, a permanent fixture. I've definitely sat in on some cases and sat with some families just because I was a legal advocate and the SART coordinator, and so it just fell naturally with my program. You know, you mentioned the fact that kids are amazingly resilient. They're real resilient. And after an incident, like, maybe the next day they'll be playing almost as if it's normal, and maybe it's not. Trauma affects us at different rates. And for me, I feel like one of the most rewarding parts is comforting the parents. I love children, and I love working with children, and I love reassuring and validating children's experiences. But sometimes the hardest part and the most important part to getting a children's trust is gaining their parents' trust. I say this a lot, you know, I said this earlier, I'm a victim of a lot of, like, childhood violence from my childhood. And I would say that I was really in tune with my mother. I was very in tune with my mother. If my mom was unhappy, I was unhappy. And so sometimes, you know, children, they can, for a while, you know, just take that hat off. And I'm not saying that the trauma isn't going to affect them later in life or when they realize the magnitude of the situation. But at that moment, sometimes they just want to sit there and play and be happy. And sometimes it's the hardest for a parent to sit there and be happy after something like this happened. Sometimes it's harder for them than the child. And so when I can comfort a parent and then put a child at ease by the fact that their parent is comforted, I feel it's the biggest reward to me. And I felt like that needed some explanation. Did you guys understand what I was talking about?
I did. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, it's really important, you know, for me as a family advocate. You know, I know my parents are and caregivers are experiencing many emotions. They go through feelings of anger, sadness, and guilt, and it's you know, when they think about what has happened to their child, and to validate, you know, and allow that parent to go through that process is very important to me. And part of being, you know, the family advocate, you know, there's a lot of different complex systems that are in place in the process, and to be able to help you know, my parents be able to navigate them, which empowers them.
I agree. And I feel like sometimes, like, parent empowerment or empowering the parent in a situation sometimes is overlooked, because I'm not saying that, you know, child sexual assault is any less of a travesty than it is. It is a tragedy, period. But sometimes we fixate a lot on the kids, which is 100% fine. But sometimes, like, parent mental health is overlooked, which I think is not fine. and so the fact that we have a lot of caregivers who are very attentive to that and knowledgeable that it is a struggle, it's awful to have someone you love hurting and to sit there and really not know how to do anything. So I feel empowerment is, like, the best tool. I preach empowerment a lot. Empowerment. Because it's being informed of the process is sometimes the best relief, because you know what's going on. So can you tell me some things about the process of the CAC Ernemta Ikayofet?
This is Carmen Anime.
Yes.
So we're located in the same building as the Tundra Women's Coalition. We're located on the right entrance side of the building. And I just wanted to point out that the CAC is not an investigation program. We are a safe place for children to come and talk to the investigation team members. So when we receive a referral, the referral call comes from law enforcement. That could be the Bethel Police Department, the Alaska State Troopers, and the Office of Children's Services. So the MDT coordinator notifies all members of the team with flight arrival times from the village, forensic interview outcomes, the case status updates. This is where we meet the child with their caregiver. And the family advocate is the family. So the family advocate is with the family from the time they come into Bethel and throughout the life of the case, or when the family decides or concludes the support service. Then the case is in the hands of law enforcement case officer. And once the case officer gathers what he or she needs for the investigation, the case is referred to the district attorney's office. And then last, the district attorney, they decide whether to accept or decline the case.
Okay. So when you're actually going through the process, when you're actually at TLDC, how does the process start?
This is Hazel, and for me, as the family advocate, I become, the primary point of contact, and a support person, as they navigate through all the various, agencies, that are involved in protecting their child. I start off with meeting, with the caregivers during the child's interview, and I try my best to address their concerns and answer questions, and then also discuss any needed support moving forward during that process. Like you said before, we want to be able to, not only for the child but as well as the caregivers, being able to assist them in completing referrals for mental health services that can help support both the child and the caregivers. And then also I look at what's in their community and help them, guide them through that, where they may not know that there are those supports in place. So also, in that time, there may be a need for assisting with and obtaining protection orders, and then also guide them through about victims' rights and the victims' compensation program.
All right. Sorry, I wasn't sure if you were going to continue after that. But thank you very much. So once the ball starts rolling, I just want to ask right now, and this is not a part of the agenda I sent out, so I apologize ahead of time. What are some of the tells of maybe nerves or nervousness or maybe some of the stressors, in the room when they first arrive? When they first arrive, I know when I used to work with CAC, I'd have parents who didn't want me to give their children food. They would prefer to give the children food themselves. Because they were hyper aware of possible dangers at that moment. They were hyper vigilant at the time. So what would you say is sometimes things you encounter when talking to someone who's nervous about a process or feels intimidated by maybe the area or just maybe your title?
Well, go ahead, Carmen. Well, for me as the family advocate, it's really important to, pay attention to the body language, you know, recognize that there are differences, and know, you know, knowing that I have a parent that is going through a lot at that moment, and being able to give them choices of how I can help them, and to let them know that, you know, even the simplest things, to, you know, either I'm preparing or we, you know, give them a safe place, you know, for them to stay with their family, while they're here in Bethel. And they have choices, and that it's not the way it's going to look is not set. Also letting them know what the investigation might look like, you know, that there will be somebody that will come and talk to them and let them know about the process, that they'll have an opportunity to meet with the team prior to the investigation. So, you know, a lot of information sharing and paying attention to what they're going through and not rush into something maybe they're not prepared for.
Yeah. I 100% wholeheartedly agree. Being informed of the process is one of the most empowering things about the process. And so, again, I'm going to say inform. It's the most comforting thing to know the path, like to know what your paths look like. Like, you don't like to go on paths in the dark. You would like to be going along paths in the woods in the light. And I feel like the same goes for court processes, any type of service processes. Like, it matters so much, right? I don't know if I interrupted a thought there, but I just want to let everyone know, inform. So what is one of the most asked questions about the events that took place, or in general, the process of receiving justice? I know it can be a very, it's very missed by the process, and rightly so, it's very complex.
This is Carmen. I wanted to add that it's really hard to say. You know, we're not investigation. You know, once the case leaves here, it's in the hands of law enforcement. And so I just want to point that out, that the process can take, you know, up to a year. It can take less than that. It can take more than that. And it's just a matter of checking in with the family, seeing how they're doing, if they've heard anything. And if they haven't, then, you know, we're able to reach out to their case officer and asking questions on behalf of caregiver or whoever it is that, you know, the child came into the CAC with. So I just wanted to add that.
No, that's really good. I working with CAC or just working with victim services in general, I've had to do protective orders with CAC members. I've had to be there during the interview with people who come to the CAC. And I will say there is no question that isn't asked. A lot of times, and this can be really hard, is that at that moment, the parent wants to know everything. They want to know, how long are we going to go through this process? Is my child going to have to testify in court? You know, what exactly happened? And, like, how can I stop this from happening? And we can say education, and we can let them know of the process, but we have no idea of the timeline. We have no idea necessarily how this goes, and sometimes we can't promise that the child won't have to, like, testify another time. I mean, it's just really, really hard to ask these very yes or no questions that people give us. And it can be frustrating both for me as an advocate and the parents, because I want to give them an answer because I know how much this answer means to them at that moment. But I have to like put on my professional hat and say, like, I'm so sorry, I can't give you definites right now, because at that moment we can't. Which it can be really difficult. And so I think that's why keeping in contact while the process is going is one of the most important things. Okay. So What are the immediate emotional needs of the parents and siblings of those children affected by sexual assault of a minor? And I'm going to say this says parents and siblings, but I'm talking aunties, uncles, grandparents, you know, people who have close relationships with these children who have experienced sexual violence.
This is Carmen. I wanted to add that so the National Children's Alliance recognizes the trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. This process includes both the child and their caregiver. The Children's Advocacy Center does not have this service available, so we partner with Bethel Family Clinic, Yukon, Kuskokwim Behavioral Health, and the Tundra Women's Coalition in-house clinician to offer this service. And I think during this initial time when we're with the caregiver or whoever the escort is, you know, we're there to listen. We're there to support them. And like if they need something more, then we're able to reach out to those that can help them, if that makes any sense there, Anime.
Thank you. Hazel, do you have anything you want to weigh in on this?
Just so much as you know, and I spoke about this earlier, is letting, you know, the validation of their feelings. They're going to go through those different types of emotions. And I know me and you had a conversation about this, a couple of days ago, about, you know, it's not just the caregivers. You know, a lot of us, here, and for myself, you know, my aunt and my, you know, my mother's siblings, my first cousins, were and are a big part of my life, and I look to them, and sometimes we often forget that, you know, when those family members find out that their loved one has been hurt, it's really difficult for them too. And the services that Carmen mentioned, you know, are open, you know, to everyone. If somebody needs that support system, they're out there, and just finding the process and reaching out to places like the CAC or TWC to see where we can go to help, it's here.
Yes, Auntie. Sorry. I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. And also, I just want to open it up. If you are an aunt, an uncle, or anyone who has a close personal relationship with a child who's experienced sexual violence, speak out, you know, reach out. We're here for you. And we understand. Well, we can't say we understand exactly what's going on in your life right now. But we understand that you have emotional needs as well when it comes to healing. So I just want to invite you, please accept TWC services. Please reach out and know what type of education or type of support you want to get. For me, I would say one of the immediate emotional needs of parents is, like, yes, there was harm done, but, you know, it's not your fault. And if your child doesn't disclose information to you, it doesn't mean that they don't trust you necessarily. I mean, there are definitely situations, but I will say that I wasn't really open about some of the abuse. Some of the abuse I was open about, but I wasn't open about some of the abuse I suffered probably until I was like 18 or 19. And it wasn't because I didn't trust my mom or I didn't have a close personal relationship with my mom. It's that, you know, kids are really observant. And I told earlier that some people are surprised at, like, the pensivity of the thoughts that I had when I was very young and going through this abuse and just asking questions to myself and not really getting them answered. And what people don't realize, like I said, that I was so in tune with my mother, but that meant that when she was struggling with finances, I felt the stress. When things were happening, I felt stress. And so when memories were resurging, this probably happened when I was like 11 to 13, where like a lot of like sexual abuse and like memories was coming up and I was remembering them again. I didn't tell my mom. I felt that we were in a good place and that we finally like got the calm in the storm. And that's why. It wasn't because, I didn't trust her. It wasn't because she didn't love me enough. In fact, I mean, I trusted her with everything else. My biggest fear was to add more stress onto her. So I want to say that if there's no disclosure made or if you didn't know about abuse, it doesn't mean necessarily that your child doesn't trust you. We really have to understand the complexity of children's thoughts, you know, oftentimes overlooked. But children going through trauma have very complex thoughts, as well as children who aren't going through trauma, and I just want to remind people that. Sorry, do you guys want to...
What I wanted to speak a little bit about is, this is Hazel again, is, you know, what should you do, if your child, or a child discloses to you? It's really important, when this happens is, you know, to remain calm, you know, don't express, shock or panic, or even disbelief, because this will cause the child to feel anxious, or feel like they've done something wrong. And then they may, withhold, or with, you know, they may get withdrawn. You know, find a private place to talk, be a listener, don't be an investigator, encourage your child, to talk in their language, you know, because often, the child is not going to have the language or the knowledge to be able to explain what has happened to them. You know, believe the child, you know, it's rare that children lie about sexual abuse, and reassure the child that they're doing something right by telling you, and stress that it's not their fault, and they're not in trouble. Often sometimes because, we may have a parent or a caregiver that they may have been a victim themselves, and they can, and it's easy to go back into their own past trauma. And this can affect how we listen or react to our child telling us. So it's really important to pull away from your self-focus and listen. Contact law enforcement right away and let that process get started, as we explained. And also, you know, don't make promises that you can't keep. Do what you can, you know, develop a safety plan. To keep your child safe in this time. So, but that was something that I really feel that, you know, because we don't often know what disclosures will sound like or what they'll look like or how to react.
Yeah, and sorry, this is going to go naturally into the topic of, like, what disclosures look like. And I'm sorry if I interrupted you, but disclosures look different for every child. You got to think about their slang, or maybe like their limited vocabulary when it comes to actually making disclosures. So they might say, I don't want to go to this person's house because they're bothering me. Sometimes you just got to ask, like, what do you mean bothering? Or they'll like start giving a disclosure, but as soon as you ask, like, what did you mean by that? They might start pulling away immediately. It's really important to understand that a lot of times the child knows the perpetrator. And the child sometimes has protective feelings over the perpetrator. So disregarding a disclosure might seem like, you know, you might think like, hey, this might be an over-exaggeration. They're just bothering. But sometimes they'll pull away from that disclosure completely and say, actually, I didn't mean anything. So it's really important that in the moment you take it seriously, as serious as possible. Okay. Sexual assault of a minor is hard to talk about in an encouraging and hopeful way. How do you communicate with a non-offending parent, and what are some of the difficulties of doing so?
Anyway, this is Carmen. I communicate by listening to the needs of the child, listening to the needs of the parent. You know, I can recommend possible options such as a referral for behavioral health, or the parent can decide what they, you know, what they need during the initial visit or at a later time. So I put it in the hands of the caregiver and what they need at, or what they decide.
Yes, empowerment and informity. Sorry. Again, I'm emphasizing that point. Hazel?
Well, yeah, the biggest part is being able to support them, and support them with information that can help better support the child and the caregiver. You know, parents are they're the experts about their children. And so, you know, just offering various resources that are available to that parent and have that parent, you know, by knowing their child, choose the path they want to take in the healing process.
Yeah. One of the biggest difficulties about sometimes about victimization is that you're not listened to or not listened to with rapt attention. And so attention is definitely probably one of the biggest things you can give to someone who's going through a hard time, especially when it's parents, like like family members, and especially when it involves kids. So I feel that you guys made excellent points about that. I think that one of the difficulties for me is that, like, and I don't want to say, like, religion's bad or anything's bad or beliefs are bad, but certain, like, beliefs or, like, more rigid systems talk a lot about forgiveness. And so sometimes I have, like, mothers or family members saying, oh, I can't forgive. I'm trying so hard. I can't forgive. I'm trying so hard to forgive this person. And one of the things that I will say is that forgiveness doesn't have to happen now. Forgiveness can happen later. Sometimes you just need to take care of your mental health, get angry, get pissed, you know, blow your top for a little second, maybe even more than a second. It's okay to be angry. And in fact, that's a 100% natural reaction to a situation like this, is to just be angry. And that's okay. I have a lot of people who come in trying to force themselves to forgive other people. And I will say, you can't forgive until you're ready. Right now, angry, let yourself be angry. It's fine. You deserve this moment to let your emotions flow, because emotions are high right now, and if you leave them bottled in your brain, it's going to hurt. So be angry, be sad, cry, yell, do what you got to do. This is a difficult and unnatural situation that should have never happened. So you don't have to forgive right away. Okay. So how can we we already went that. How do you have conversations with children in an age-appropriate way about consent and sexual touching? I'm actually going to start with this one. A lot of times, we usually start by demystifying words like penis or vagina, you know. You know, kids will giggle, and we'll let them know, like, hey, you can giggle, you can laugh, you can say but, go ahead and laugh. It's okay. but, you know, I talked a little bit about how my friend's daughter, her instinct was to tell when someone was going to take her to the bathroom. Sometimes it's simple as, one, being able to know when they're in a vulnerable situation. I mean, she knew she was going to go to the bathroom, have her pants down, you know. She knew she was in a vulnerable situation, and her instinct was to tell someone. So one is educating kids about vulnerable situations. Two, learning about unwanted touching versus unsafe touching. And we like to talk about this in certain situations, and the rule is no one can touch my private body parts except to keep me clean and healthy. So the way we talk about this with children is that if you go to a doctor because you have a rash in between your leg and your private body parts, and they touched your private body parts to move them out of the way, is that safe? And we'll talk about, you know, if a parent's there, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And they'll be like, oh, okay, that's safe. But if someone is like a dentist and they're supposed to be looking in your mouth, or they're supposed to be looking in your ears or at your eyes, is it okay for them as doctors to touch your private body parts? And we tell them, like, the reasons why it's not safe. We talk about sometimes it's family members, about how to tell on a family member and how it's not something you should be guilty about. And then also it's when they're like really, really little, it's this regular consent. If someone goes in to hug them and they're trying to squirm out of their arms, screaming, crying to get out, sometimes it's easy as like making a point to tell them to let your child go. That's obviously a non-consensual, physical contact. You can still slip in messaging about consent, about vulnerability, about safety, but you don't necessarily have to be explicit. It's the things that they grow up setting boundaries around, and physical contact is definitely a boundary that people should be wary of when it comes to children. They are tiny people in a world full of big and dangerous people. So we have to really think about their discomfort with strangers or people they don't know and physical contact with seriousness, because that's a scary situation to be in.
Thank you, Anami. This is Carmen. Education, you know, we need to teach our children, and it begins in our homes. So my daughter is 11 years old. Her father and I taught her what private parts mean, using words we don't hear on a daily basis, such as, you know, vagina, penis, and breasts. These are, you know, these are her private parts, and that no one should be touching you in these areas of your body. Even having conversations with my children about known people motioning them to come into their own private home or follow them into a private space where no one will see them. You know, you come straight home and you tell me and your dad. So as a mother, you know, this is my way of teaching my son and daughter. And the way that you teach your child will look different and sound different.
Yes, there is no one way to teach people about consent, but just knowing your physical boundaries and what puts you in vulnerable situations can sometimes be enough, and I definitely agree, especially when going into situations. Kids sometimes don't think before going into situations. That's how I ended up in a lot of situations where I had injuries, because I was a child and I said, I'm going to climb that. And I didn't think about the dangers. And I like to think about growing up knowing the signs as like actually have like danger. This tree is rotten. Like, you know, in the everyday life situations, and education I feel is those signs. And the more you talk about them, the brighter and the more noticeable they get. So what would you like to tell adults, parents, friends, or family members of children who may one day be told that someone inappropriately touched them?
I can add there, Anami. This is Carmen. So if your child discloses that they have been touched, we recommend that you stop asking questions and reach out to law enforcement. Call Bethel Police Department or the Alaska State Troopers and make the report. So that's all I can add right now.
Thank you. And that is definitely one way we go about it. But I will say this is kind of like immediate And I have to train my brain to do this every day. So if you're not good at this, that's okay. But at that moment, do not let your face show anything. Just try your best to make your physical, like your body language and your face, stay as neutral as possible. And the reason why is because kids are really perceptive. I said that before, you know, a lot of times people are surprised at how much I remember or how much or how deeply I thought about the situation I was in when I was a child. They pick up on body language like nothing. It's easy for them. Like I said, they're little people in a big, big world full of big and dangerous people. And so their bodies are in tune to the adults around them. They look at you in vulnerable situations to look at, like, is she angry? Is she sad? Did I make her sad? Did I make her angry? Because they will internalize that, and they will say, well, she's angry, even though you might be thinking about the other person, even though you might not even be thinking about, like, any type of ill feelings towards the child. They will take it as she's angry at me. She's angry because I said this. And, of course, this doesn't apply for all children or all situations, but I, in my own experience, having a lot of memories from when I was a child, it really was, like, terrifying to have an adult with an angry face, even if it wasn't directed at me. Anyone with sibling knows, like, okay, where is, like, I'm going to use my sister, where's Keisha? She's in trouble. I'm immediately scared because my mom is angry. And so you have to really think about how much that's going to be emphasized in a vulnerable situation like this. So for the last question, is there any last message or thought you would like to leave for those who are listening right now?
This is Hazel. Just, you know, going more about what we talked about when our child discloses is staying calm, believing your child, letting them know that they are not to blame for what happened, praise them for being brave, for telling you, and first and foremost, you know, protect your child. Protect your child by getting your child away from the abuser and immediately reporting this to local authorities, and that's what I'd like to leave with.
This is Carmen. My last message, you know, this, you know, of course, is a heavy, heavy topic, and I just want the listeners out there to, you know, take care of yourself, take care of your families. You know, your children are, you know, they're the ones that take care of us, and be kind to yourself and just take care. Guyana, thank you all.
Thank you. And I think the last thing I'm going to actually put on here is if you're a mommy, your daddy, or caregiver, family member, a family friend of a child that has experienced sexual assault. I talked about how I didn't disclose until very later on some of the abuses I had. Is that it's not your fault. Again, I know we said this before, but hopefully hearing this from a child who didn't disclose until very later on, my mom is wonderful. My mom is attentive. She always did her best to protect us. But she couldn't protect us from everything. And though there's definitely things you can do, and there's ways you can inform, educate, and prevent children from being in those situations, that will help, definitely. It's okay if you're not educated, because you can't do better until you learn. And I just want to let anyone know who might be listening who are carrying a lot of guilt or feel blame to know that I, as a child, didn't feel that way. And maybe your children didn't feel that they had anyone to blame except for the perpetrator. All right. So thank you for listening to the TWC Peace Talk Radio Show. Again, this is Annie Mae Lee, the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator, along with Carmen Pitka and Hazel Kieser, who work at the CAC Ignante Ikayurvat Children's Advocacy Center. If you would like to know more about our services or more of our outreach programs or about the CAC, you can call our 24-hour crisis line at 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number at 1-800-478-7799, and our Bethel local business line at 907-543-3444. Again, our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number is 1-800-478-7799, and our Bethel local business line is 907-543-3444. All right, Carmen and Hazel, would you like to say a last goodbye?
Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you all, and you guys all have a wonderful Wednesday and good morning.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed our Peace Talk Radio show. Again, this is Annie Mae Lee, and I would like to say goodbye to you all, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.